Oh no, the Astros haven't won a game this season. Let's overreact. Welcome into Stone Cold Show, a special opening day edition. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by Charlie Pulido. Read his work weekly on sportsmap.com and follow him on X at Pulido. Josh Jordan sits next to him. You can read him daily on sportsmap.com and follow him on X at JoshJordan975. Before we get into the conversation, just an obligatory plug to hit like on the video so that we don't get buried in the algorithm. And be sure to hit subscribe on the channel if you haven't already. It does help us out immensely. Gents, let's get right into it. First of all, very good game, very entertaining game. Some bright spots to talk about. One of the biggest question marks coming in to the season for this team, for the Astros, was Framber Valdez. Charlie, I don't think he answered many of those questions today. What do you think?
Well, not positively, anyway. And, of course, with 161 more to go, when you're reacting to just one game, it lends itself to overreaction. But when there are things that spoke to a pretty good bulk of last season, it's an early tweak, you know, reminder that, well, some things need to work themselves out. Framber's movement today was fantastic. The problem was too often he had no idea where that movement was going to wind up. He was only scored upon in one inning. And when Framber is on, he's going to get double play balls. But he was tiptoeing through minefields and got out of a couple jams that you're not going to make a steady living getting three double play grounders in four innings on an all too frequent basis. But five hits allowed plus the six walks, just way too much traffic in the game. And something we talked about the other day in the weekly regularly scheduled podcast, if your starters are going to struggle to get through five, much less six, hardly ever seven, you're going to need more work from middle relievers who may not be up to the job, as opposed to if they're in the game when it's 8-1 up or down. But when you're in a tight game, credit to Seth Martinez for working through his inning. Not the same for Montero. And, of course, Ryan Pressly, ex-closer Ryan Pressly, ultimately gave up the decisive run. There's no reason to be unduly concerned with Pressly. I don't think he's going to emotionally crater because he's no longer the closer. But over the course of this entire season, there should not be three or four more times where the Astros blow a four-run lead and lose the game. So maybe they got it out of their system as early as possible.
Yeah, for me, it was just the walks, man. Nine walks and one hit batter. You can't give 10 free passes to the Yankees, especially when you have a lead that big. They were cruising early, and you thought it'd get out of hand, and they'd take care of business. But, you know, Cortez kind of settled in. Astros had some quick at-bats. I thought the umpiring was questionable, but I thought it was on both sides throughout the game. A lot of pitches just – after a while, I started to get the sense like, okay, he'll give you a little bit off the corner at the knees on each side of the plate. But if it's a little low and over the plate, like Framber was getting squeezed there a little bit, that hurts you. But when you can't throw any first-pitch strikes, you're not consistently finding the strike zone. Sorry, Framber, you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt, man. You're just too wild. Umpires, they're not going to give that to you. So that was my big takeaway there was just Framber. I was hoping for a little more. I didn't mind the length, how long he was in the game. In fact, I was kind of thinking maybe get somebody up. I mean, this guy is just, like Charlie said, tiptoeing through a minefield every inning here. We need to have some answers. I didn't love Seth Martinez being the first guy in there with, you know, with all the traffic on the bases. That was a tough time, tough position for him there. So, you know, a couple things from a spot where I'm like, oh, maybe I wouldn't have done that. But, you know, nothing that really rings any alarm bells. It was a close game, but one that, frankly, I think they should have won.
To turn it offensively, because one of those, if not alarm bells, certainly piqued the curiosity of many, was pinch hitting Singleton for Jake Meyers. Honestly, the Astros, whether it was Dusty last season, Espada now, they need to come to the realization that Jonathan Singleton is not a legit major league player. Never has been, wasn't last year. Yes, there's the chance he runs into the very occasional mistake and hits it 400 feet. You know, he drew one real important walk in the Game 5 win in Arlington last season. But Josh Singleton has pretty much done nothing but fail in the major leagues. Now, Espada did offer a very specific explanation in his post-game remarks that against that pitcher, he devours righties. So Singleton against the guy throwing low, he's John Singleton. I'm not that worried about the platoon advantage. You know, if you wanted to get Jake Meyers out after his home run with a good taste in his mouth, as opposed to having him go flail and fail against a right-handed reliever. But in the end, John Singleton should not be taking at-bats, plate appearances away from anybody because he's never demonstrated the talent to merit those opportunities.
Another quick one here, Brandon. I just, the Montero thing. Remember we talked about this the other day, like, oh, it'd be nice to get him off to a good start, build his confidence. What's he do? Comes in, gives up a home run. I mean, that's just, that's kind of who he is right now. And it's frustrating because it's going to be in his head again. And he always gets hit to right field too. Pretty often I notice it's just something about the ball carries for him. That was concerning to me because I saw him warming up and I was like, oh, it's not going to get better with Montero coming in. But at the same time, who else does he have to go to? I get it. I'm not going to kill him for that, but it's just more of a narrative about Montero. And then my other big takeaway, not mad at him. I didn't think Dubon got a very good jump off of second base when he got thrown out. And I do think he got thrown out. I don't think that was the replay didn't get a great angle of it. I watched it back a couple times. He didn't get a great jump. Kind of took a really kind of wide angle around third base. Maybe that could have been a little better. And we know how it ended up. Every inch counted right there. And I think that might have been at least the difference in tying the ball game.
And the depth on this team really starts to come into question. And I know they were a light reliever because of the Brian Abreu suspension. But you're relying on guys like Seth Martinez and John Singleton and high leverage situations here. And look, I'm not putting this on them. You know, this isn't their fault. There were a lot of other opportunities. The Astros just stopped scoring. You know, I don't want to put this on their back, but one thing you talked about is, look, John Singleton still being on this team. And we said, oh, well, he's a lock because he's out of options. And I think the bigger truth here is that the Astros seem to be out of options because you had an entire offseason to replace him and find anything, any sort of left-handed bat. And look, I'm not going to kill a spot. It's game one of 162, so we have a long runway to go here. But trying to justify Singleton because Loaizaga eats up right-handed bats, well, like,
Major League pitching behind the plate. Eaten up John Singleton.
Correct. So what are we even doing in that situation? At least Jake Meyers had made contact with a ball recently, and I'm not saying Jake Meyers would have had a better outcome in that situation. But you really start to look at the depth. One thing I couldn't help but think of was the conversation we just had about the Yankees having they not even being in the top 10 in relief pitching depth when we look at that Fangraphs chart, and you know the Astros being at 4, and then it just seemed like we could not bring in a reliever that would not, or just a pitcher in general that wouldn't walk outside of Josh Hader's debut, which was really awesome. Let's talk about how did you like Espada's order? This is our first time seeing it in live action. I liked it. What did you guys see?
Altuve 1-for-5 with a couple of strikeouts. 2-for-5 for Yordan. Bregman, I don't care that he hit 930 in the spring. He has chronically gotten off to slow starts in the games that count. So it bears watching. You know, 1-for-5 today. Again, it's one game. So not to judge off the body of work when there's no body to it. It's one game. The lineup construction, and we've covered this in the run-up to the start of the season, moving Alvarez to the two-hole, I'm good with that. Tucker ahead of Bregman, I'm good with that. Abreu batting fifth, I'm not good with that. He stunk last season. Picked it up later in the year, but overall, Jose Abreu, a bad player. He's one of the slowest guys, maybe the slowest guy on the team in the post-Maldonado era. You know, Chaz McCormick and Yiner Diaz, who thinks that Jose Abreu will be the best offensive player among those three guys this season? And again, just one game, but Yiner with a three-hit opener, along with the fact the slowest guy of those three, I would want Abreu hitting below them. So if there's traffic on the base, someone who can score from first on a double or second on a single, both McCormick and Diaz are way more capable of doing that than is Jose Abreu. But fundamentally, off the seasons they had at the plate last year, Yiner in under 400 plate appearances, but not in 45 plate appearances, and Chaz McCormick, they were quantum leaps better than Jose Abreu. So the lineup, I think, should be Chaz 5, Yiner 6, Abreu 7, or maybe against the right-hander, Yiner 5, the reverse splits numbers that he had. And while McCormick was much better against righties last season than he'd been previously in his career, he was merely pretty good against righties. He's a one-man murderer's row against lefties. So anytime they're facing a lefty starter, like, say, Nestor Cortez or Carlos Rodon, I find their very callow justification for hitting McCormick behind Jose Abreu.
Yeah, Jose Abreu had that was one of the other things, like, here we go again. It was a take two strikes, call timeout, then swing at a third fastball, and it's over. That was against Loaisiga in the bottom of the seventh. The Abreu typical.
Only started without a hit for them in the opener.
Yeah, I mean, that was rough. And then, you know, back to the Singleton thing, he didn't want a righty in there hitting off of Loaisiga. Well, Diaz got a single, and then Pena got a single. And then you pull out Jake Myers to put in Singleton, you know. But Espada did say in the post-game wrap-up there that that was kind of planned out, that they knew how difficult he was against righties. So I think that was something they maybe predetermined that they were going to do ahead of time.
I think that's clearly the case. I just think it was flawed planning, because implementing John Singleton in your offensive game plan, I think generally is a low percentage play. If you felt Jake Myers was going to be overmatched despite the home run, he's always been a high strikeout guy. Well, Dubon is the best put the ball in play guy now on their roster, with Michael Brantley retired. Bregman would be in that range as well. But to at least put it in play, give yourself a shot, as Dubon did leading off the bottom of the ninth. You know, obviously it's nothing personal against John Singleton, and we've noted on repeated occasions what a good story getting his life together to even get it back in the major leagues. It doesn't mean he's a good major leaguer. This is not a movie.
We didn't really get a chance to talk about this during a week because it was a little late developing, but Jordan Montgomery, after seeing what Frobert did today, again, like, we don't want to jump to conclusions here, but there are question marks about this rotation. Granted, there may be some help coming maybe middle to later in the season, but he's a little bit surprised that the Astros weren't in on something that was so team favorable of a deal.
No, I just don't think that Jim Crane, at least at this point in time, had interest in blowing past that second tax threshold. And I think they have their eggs, and we'll have to hope it's a sturdy enough basket on all the prospective guys coming back. Verlander coming back as Verlander. Urquidy, when healthy last year, wasn't good. Luis Garcia, you certainly expect to be a capable, say, fourth starter type guy. And then Lance McCullers, you cross your fingers when he gets back before his next injury. You're paying McCullers $17 million. And then once you added $19 million of Josh Hader, I think that pretty much bolted the door shut. Because when you look at what Blake Snell got, 2 years, $62 million, Montgomery, incredible, just the 1 year of 25, the second year almost certainly will vest for his option at least $20 million. But the short-term deal without that long-term, where you're just holding a devastating sunk cost contract. So either of those deals could have been astro-palatable in the short term. It says to me that, one, they just were not willing to go to that financial threshold, which isn't a wholly unreasonable decision. But if it comes back and bites you in the butt, you don't get total immunity against it.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out, we heard the Yankees sniffing around him all offseason, and they didn't want to do it either. And the report I read, they wanted to defer a lot of the money, and Montgomery was like, I'd rather not do that if I don't have to. So, you know, even the Yankees didn't want to pay it, so I'm not so surprised the Astros aren't. But that was the thing, is it would have been nice if Fromber would have come out and just been a little better today. They didn't necessarily have to win, but just – not just start walking the bases loaded seemingly every inning. I mean, that's something you can't do. And then Seth Martinez kind of does that. It gets kind of contagious with pitchers, where it gets in your head and, you know, one guy struggling to find the zone, then the next guy is. So it was nice to see Josh Hader come in, just blow guys away. That's what you're paying him for. Presley, I thought he got a little too happy and excited with his breaking stuff. We've seen him do that from time to time in seasons past. He did a little bit of that today. When he went back to the fastball, he had some success to get out of the inning. So that's another thing from last year, where Presley, when he went to the fastball a little more often, he got people off that power curve, off the slider, and that's how he got out of the inning today as well. So something he needs to keep in mind. The fastball is a good pitch. I know his breaking stuff is where his bread's buttered, but you got to keep guys off balance.
You know, the pitching gave up the 4-run lead, but if you score exactly 4 runs every game, you're not going to be a 100-win team, right? Major League Baseball average scores above 4. And they did pound out 13 hits today, right? You amass 13 hits, you expect 4 runs. The offense with 3 in the first, then you added one more after that, and then nothing over the last 6 innings. So not all about the pitching in defeat today, but we know the lineup's going to be productive. It is possible the starting pitching for this team is a mess. Again, it's just one starter, Fromber, but since that comes off the entirety of last second half of last season, right? Javier the first time out, counting on the improvement of Hunter Brown. There's plenty of viable reasons to see Hunter Brown making a leap this year, but you're going to bet the ranch on that? And then after that, you know, Verlander, you expect to at minimum be competent. But Urquidy, Ronel Blanco, when they get here, Garcia, McCullers, if Brandon Belak is ever making fill-in starts. You know, maybe Spencer Arrighetti gets off to a real fast start at Sugarland and he creeps into the picture. But they do have way more question marks in that starting rotation than we've seen here in years.
And that makes, honestly, the bullpen that much scarier. How do you bridge this bullpen? Because, yeah, you got a fireballer at the back end of your bullpen, but you got to get there. How do you bridge to get to your leverage arms if your rotation's not going to give you length?
Not as consistently successfully as we're accustomed to around here over the last 6-7 years. I mean, just think back to when they won the World Series in 2022. Ryan Stanek had an ERA of 1.15 for the season and couldn't even get on the mound in the postseason because they had 5-6 other options that the staff was more comfortable with. Now, particularly the first couple of games of the season with the Braves suspended, the Astros have two good relievers, right? Presley and Hader. That's it. No one else has any sort of established major league track record of quality. Martinez gave him a few good innings a couple of years ago, but then basically didn't even make the team last year, right? Montero was sensational and part of why Stanek was put into dry dock in a postseason 2022. Well, he's been a mess now for a season and one outing. So they're just going to scuffle. They're going to have to deal with how most of the rest of Major League Baseball lives year to year, because how many teams have 5, 6, 7 deep in the bullpen that when they come in, you think, oh, there's no way we're giving up runs this inning. And the Astros now fall into that morass. And if the bridge needs to be longer from the starter to the back end guys, it's going to cost the Astros some games.
I don't know about you guys, but when I saw Seth Martinez come in, even before anything happened, I was like, I kind of miss Phil Maton in this moment. It ran through my head. I was like, man, I miss that guy. And to Charlie's point, not having Brian Abreu made a big difference in today's game. That one really hurt. So at least that's temporary. If we're looking at the bright side, right? You know, one more game, he's not available, and then you have Abreu back. I did think it was interesting that Espada decided to go with Hader in the ninth and keep the game close. And that ended up being the right decision. I was happy to see that. So, I mean, because they almost pulled it out, but you do have three more with the Yankees and you fired one of your Hader bullets, but it was the right move. You got to give yourself a chance to win the ball game. It was just interesting too, as I was watching the game, like, oh, is this what Dusty would have done? Or is this more of an Espada type thing? Just as somebody that's seen so many games managed by Dusty Baker, I find it curious. I'm just interested to kind of compare, like, ooh, do I think Dusty would have done that? Or is this an Espada deal? So that'll be something I'll be watching over the course of the whole season.
And so on that bullpen, they just hope to cultivate that depth that a couple of guys, you know, the variability of the non-stud relievers is just pretty high year to year. So maybe Martinez gets back to where when he was on the roster a couple of years ago and doing good work, maybe he can get there. And we should also mention in terms of the depth, right? Kendall Graveman, not nearly in the class of Hader, Presley, Abreu, but Graveman was a legit major league reliever. So as your fourth best reliever, as Maton was for most of last season, well, now they're without either of those guys and throw in Stanek as well. So there are going to be some struggles. And it's probably not going to be the only time this season they give up a four-run lead and lose the game. Good news is they have a lineup that's certainly capable of coming from four down and winning more than their share of games. You just don't want to have to do it as often as some other teams may have to.
No Souza either. That was something that kind of popped up at the last minute with that shoulder inflammation. He was so good at the end of the regular season last year. I think we were all kind of hoping, like, hey, maybe we found something in this guy, but, you know, doesn't make the roster, has to hit the injured list. So maybe he can come back and give you something.
Water finds its level over 162 games. If the Yankees were to somehow sweep this series, it would feel devastating around here. And hey, four losses in late March count as much as four losses in September. But you look at the Yankees and, well, I mean, maybe Rizzo starts over Abreu because he's the lesser declined guy of the two. Other than that, Judge would be the Astros center fielder over Myers. Kyle Tucker's excellent, but he's not as good as Juan Soto. So those two guys would start. That's it. Those are the only Yankees who'd crack their lineup. Maybe Volpe, the shortstop, has a big second year and rises above where Jeremy Peña is as a player. But Volpe's rookie season was not as good as Peña's disappointing sophomore season. Gleyber Torres is a good player. No one's taking him over Altuve. I know Oswald Cabrera hit the game-winning home run today in the opener. I don't think anyone would take him over Alex Bregman for this season. Yiner over any of the Yankees catchers. and Verdugo in left, if Yordan's in left, that's a pretty easy call too. So, hey, you know, maybe the Yankees cobble it together this season and they're both better this year than I expect them to be, and the Astros aren't as quite as good. But in a short sample size, just think back to those A's and Royals pratfalls in September. Bad teams could beat outstanding teams in the short run. It's over 162. Water will find its level. And I can't resist. Organizationally, the Astros deserve to lose for having the roof open on a day where first pitch was 75 degrees and the humidity was 37%. If the faint argument was that 75 degrees with that low humidity, people would still be getting scorched on the first base side. Well, what's the excuse for a Friday night game then?
Josh, I think it's funny because I kind of have some of those mental exercises too of, you know, WWDD, what would Dusty do? And I guess the good news out of the situation is Jonathan Loaisiga going two innings in this game means you're probably not going to see him tomorrow. Going forward, though, Charlie, who do you have in that role? Because you don't have a lot of options in left-handed bats. What do you do in a situation in which, you know, it dictates a lefty bat? But you've got John Singleton there. I don't know that a 140 hitter is going to get done.
The odds are he will not. Joey Loperfido needs to just go off at AAA for a while, and he can push himself to the major league roster as long as there'd be enough playing time. You know, a guy you think can ultimately be a major league regular, when he gets to the bigs, you don't want him getting two at-bats per week off the bench. You know, you'd want him to be getting at least two, three starts. So if Abreu further erodes or an injury somewhere creates playing time. But again, how many guys in the Astros lineup would you be regularly considering pinch hitting for? Right, Maldonado, every at-bat. Well, now with Yiner as the primary catcher, I can't envision a circumstance where you'd ever hit for Yiner Diaz. Pretty similarly, Chaz McCormick. Unless you had a true left-handed masher off the bench. And the reality is, you know, with rare exceptions, they're bench guys because they're not good enough to be everyday guys. So that the Astros bench is particularly thin with Singleton, right? Greg Kessinger is a versatility guy, but not thought of as a major league stick. Caratini is your second catcher. You probably don't want to be using him. And it's not like he has some Mike Piazza or Buster Posey-esque hitting pedigree anyway. You know, the starters, the heavy hitters have to do most of the heavy lifting offensively. And over the course of the season, no one should be lacking confidence that they will do just that.
Yeah, the Caratini thing, Charlie, that's what I thought of. I'm like, I think we all agree you think he has a better shot than Singleton, right?
Look, I'd rather have Cesar Salazar here as a third catcher. And then if I wanted to hit the guy batting from the left side, I can use Caratini rather than Singleton. And, you know, if this feels like the slap John Singleton session, it's not that. It's just addressing the reality of what he's done as a major leaguer. He doesn't offer you any additional positional flexibility. It's essentially a wing and a prayer when you're sending him up to pinch hit. What's the saying? Hope is not a plan.
Yeah. Don't confuse hope with a plan. That's it.
Yeah. Guys, prediction for tomorrow. What do we see? What do we learn from this that will bleed over into tomorrow's game to give them the best chance to win?
Well, I guess the funny thing, not necessarily haha, is in a single game situation, way more often than not, you would lean Astros, right? They're better than most of the teams they play. So in one game, even though the likelihood of the odds holding in one game are smaller than they are over 1 month or 6 months of baseball, but they're at Minute Maid Park, and we have a full season's worth of evidence where the Astros were not a good team, finishing 40-41 and then going 1-5 in the playoffs, and then they lose the opener to the Yankees. Yankee fans are going to be extremely curious. You know, they had their rotation questions too. Carlos Rodon was a disaster and then injured against Javier, who was good for a while into the season, not 2022 good, but good, and then he frombered, right, and faded badly in the second half. So just as a coin flip, if it came up heads Yankees day one, I would go Astros game two with the most likely outcome of the series at this point in time, a split of the four.
Yeah. I mean, Rodon, he can be great or he can fall apart. He's one of those guys. And Javier is kind of in that same boat too. What worries me about Javier is even when he's going right, he's not a guy that it's going to get you through the sixth inning regularly, you know, and this is going to be his first pass through the rotation. So he's going to be even more limited in theory than normal as far as giving you some extra innings. And they already had to get in that bullpen pretty early today. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. Also that it's another left-hander. So I would expect the same lineup that we saw today. We'll see if that turns out to be the case. I thought it was interesting that Espada said, hey, we're gonna have Yordan Tucker no matter who the starting pitcher is. That's how that's going to go in the lineup. So we don't really have to question that anymore. So hopefully you get a great outing from Javier. One more bonus, one good thing. Yainer Diaz, who struggled so mightily against lefties and limited at bats last year, he seemed to do okay today with three hits. I don't know if they were all off lefties, but I'm sure a couple of them were. So that is a little icing on the cake there. Looks like Yiner's going to be okay when a lefty's on the hill.
A little extra attention to the pitch count in the early innings for Javier, because if it goes high, well, sometimes he struggles to get you to the middle innings. They could really use a six-inning start. From Javier, seven would be better, but I'm trying to temper expectations given his career to this point, because I think Hader and Presley are each available for an inning tomorrow, but if you use them tomorrow, then they're certainly not available Saturday, but you get Abreu back Saturday, and it's going to be some bubblegum and bailing wire with the bullpen beyond those three guys. Parker Mushinski get a debut tomorrow as the left-handed reliever while Souza is convalescing, because they did use, what, five relievers today. The troika of Dotel, Lidge, Wagner, that all three of those guys worked, I forget the numbers, at least 70-75 innings, then Hader, Presley, Abreu was the only one to work even 70 last season. I don't think that Joe Espada is thinking, hey, you know, they're gonna be more manly men with me as the skipper, I'm hoping for 85-90 innings out of these guys. But it doesn't mean that I don't think he'll be reluctant about using them 2 days in a row, three out of four, if you can then compensate with some rest time on the back end. But if Javier goes no longer in game two than Fromber did in game one, well, then the Astros better put seven runs on the board.
That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Strohs. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a five-star rating if you're listening to this on in audio form. Charlie, Josh, and I will catch you on Monday during our regularly scheduled show. Appreciate it. And as always, we hope for a better result tomorrow. Go Strohs.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.